The White House has announced the withdrawal of troops from northern Syria. The move appeared to give a green light to a Turkish invasion of northern Syria, where they view Kurdish forces as a terrorist threat. The Kurdish forces played an instrumental role alongside the US in fighting Islamic State in Syria. Following criticism over the move, the US president warned Turkey that he will destroy their economy if they move to launch an invasion. So what responsibility does Australia have in this equation? John Blaxland is a professor of international security and intelligence at the ANU. John Blaxland, welcome.
Thanks for having me on the program, Patricia.
The Morrison government has really said very little about Donald Trump's plans in northern Syria. The defence minister has said a few words, that she's seen the reports of Donald Trump's comments, but that it's too early to speculate. What should the government be doing here?
Keeping a low profile. The bottom line is that what Trump's doing is flies in the face of advice from his defence and foreign affairs people, the State Department, and seems to be an attempt, classic Trumpian move, single-handedly to try and bring Erdogan and Turkey back into the fold by doing a deal that's going to placate them over the Kurds, by allowing for an incursion into northern Syria that will enable the Turkish authorities and the military there to assert themselves in an area which they've long wanted to do in terms of controlling and pushing back on the Kurds in that space. And in so doing, I think Trump's trying to do a deal so that Erdogan will come back into the NATO fold, you know, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, which is headed by the United States, of which Turkey is the only Asian outpost of it, in Asia Minor, of course, the only non-Western, you know, non-European country that's part of NATO, but it's also a linchpin country in terms of the United States' presence in the Middle East and its ability to reach out through particularly the Incirlik Air Base in southeastern Turkey, a major US Air Force facility that they can use to operate across the Middle East and influence things in Russia and the old stands as well. So it's pretty important real estate for the United States. But interestingly enough, there's a sense, though, in the United States, from the pundits I've been tracking, that there's a sense that the game's kind of already lost. The horse has already bolted. And this is most clearly illustrated with the sale by Russia of the S-400 missile defense network and the collapse of the F-35 stealth fighter deal by the United States. They're systems that are designed to actually be opposed to each other. The F-35 is supposed to be able to defeat the S-400 air defence missile system. So for Turkey to buy it, it meant that the United States and Australia and others are worried that perhaps the code would be compromised. So the bottom line is that Turkey has already shown that it's shifting towards more into the Russian orbit than the NATO-US orbit. But, you know, we're seeing also Trump here demonstrating once again his real desire to get the United States out of the Middle East. The problem is, of course, two decades of promises in the Middle East, one of which, particularly over the last few years, to the Kurds. The Kurds have been instrumental in beating Daesh, or the Islamic State, now called the Islamic State Group, because they don't have a state anymore. They're all corralled and contained by Kurdish Defence Force people. So if this goes ahead, if this deal transpires, and the Turks are allowed into this space that's been dominated by the Kurds, then what happens to the ISG, the so-called Islamic State Group fighters who've been detained?
Okay, so what does happen to those fighters, and what responsibility, in your view, does Australia have in relation to the foreign fighters who are Australian and their families?
Oh, that's a really vexed question, Patricia. You know, people have been waxing over this one lyrical for some time now, because there is a real moral dilemma. You know, these are Australian citizens. Do we bring them home? Will that make things easier for resolving, for, you know, putting out the flames of the IS flames, or will it actually spread the fire? Will these children, the offspring of Daesh, if you like, will they manifest as the next head of the Hydra in other parts of the world, including in Melbourne, Sydney, and other parts of Australia? This is the deep-seated fear that is pushing the government to withhold approval to bring them home, because there is a sense that the government really doesn't know what to do. And the so-called, you know, all the countering violent extremist programs that have been operating in Australia, haven't really been all that effective. They've been moderately effective. I don't want to can them all by any stretch of the imagination, because there's some very good work done, but it's not nearly as effective as you would have thought it should have been 18 years after 9/11.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has essentially led a group of Republicans who have been defending President Donald Trump on lots of issues, including over this impeachment that he's facing. But on this, they've drawn a line in the sand. What do you make of that and the potential consequences of that? Do you think it may lead to a review of what we're seeing here?
Well, it's a very interesting development, because I think what we're seeing is Mitch McConnell and others really picking up on this commitment that they've made to the Kurds. They basically promised them since the rise of Daesh and Islamic State back in 2014 that we've got your back. You do the fighting for us, we'll be there for you. We'll be right behind you. Well, you know, this is kind of one of those really important messaging moments. If the United States is seriously going to offer that kind of pretty genuine promise to the Kurds and then walk away from it 5 years later, what message does that send to other US allies around the world, not the least of which is Australia? And people like McConnell get it. They get that there are enormous ramifications from walking away entirely from supporting the Kurds. Now, that's why I think you've seen in Trump's tweetdom, a tweet after the event saying, oh, you know, if the Turks do anything really extreme, we'll really get them. Well, you know, you've already made the deal with Erdogan. If you follow through on it, Trump, then you really are going to send a powerful message that of a cavalier disdain for what's happening in Syria, and also that sends messages to Iran. Now, because of course these are all linked. We've got Turkey, we've got Iran, we've got Saudi Arabia. You know, Saudi Arabia's been a victim of drone attacks recently that have been attributed, some say, to Iran, some say maybe Iranian proxies, perhaps from Iraq. This is really complicated, and Trump's trying to keep it simple, but he's oversimplifying it. In fact, he's effectively dumbing it down to a ludicrous degree, because the world is complicated. The United States has obligations. It walks away from this one, it has knock-on consequences elsewhere. And as much as he might try and win over Erdogan, most pundits, I think, agree the horse has already bolted. He's made up his mind. His bread is better buttered on the Russian side than on the NATO-US side, as much as Trump might promise to the contrary.
Just on another topic, the government is reassessing the strategic assumptions that underpin the 2016 White Paper. What do you think needs to be reviewed, and what is the greatest threat facing Australia?
Well, this is the real conundrum. You know, if you ask environmentalists, you say it's climate change. If you ask defence policy wonks, it's China. If you ask people in the countering violent extremism or the cyberspace, they'll say it's cyber, or it's internationally organised crime syndicates, it's drug smuggling. Which one is it? Well, actually, I think it's a confluence of factors. We're seeing great power contestation, we're seeing global climate change, and we're seeing a spectrum of governance challenges combining to present a conundrum that is bigger than any one government department, and that is bigger than any one kind of capability, for which the government needs a suite of capabilities to perhaps respond in the face of a spectrum of possibilities, ranging from having to rescue people from a micro-Pacific island, or from having to contribute, let's just say, to responding to a crisis, a security crisis in Indonesia related to climate change, or perhaps something greater, or perhaps even combining that with other sort of threats that might be cyber related or might be people smuggling related. The bottom line is that when it comes to defence capabilities, we only tend to think about ships, submarines, aircraft and tanks. And of course, nowadays, what we're seeing, and we've seen that partly displayed on that wonderful 70th anniversary parade that Xi Jinping put on for us, very clearly outlining a message that strongly counteracted the Chinese ambassador to Australia's message of, oh, there's no Cold War. There's no Cold War here, folks. What are you going on about, talk about a Cold War? But we'll just put on a parade, a bigger parade than ever was seen in the Soviet Union, a more potent, more powerful display of Chinese assertiveness, Chinese ability and determination to dominate domestically and internationally. So these are really loud signals that lead to someone like Linda Reynolds and the Defence Department portfolio to think, you know, that 2016 white paper, maybe it wasn't quite robust enough. Back then, people used to say, oh, 2% of GDP, that's pushing the envelope, John. That's really going out there. Nowadays, people are saying, and there's a lot of them out there, saying, you know, 2.5%, Hugh White's done it, 3.5%, Peter Jennings at ASPE and others are now saying 2% is really, you know, who are we kidding? We were living very optimistically in 2016 as to the scale and the severity and the spectrum of challenges we would be facing out into the future.
John Blaxland, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us this afternoon.
Good on you, Patricia. Thanks for having me on.
That's John Blaxland, who's a professor of international security and intelligence studies at the ANU. This is RN Drive. Patricia Carvelis with you. 0418 226 576 is the text line.